Jim Ed fixed himself a sandwich from Hallie's leftovers, then heated a pot of coffee Wes's way, poured a couple of cups, and stepped out onto the porch.
Here, maybe some coffee will make you feel better.
Wes's eyes narrowed at the first sip. Jim Ed realized he had fallen short as a coffee maker. How could he make decent coffee with old grounds and a pot that probably hadn't been scrubbed clean since Grandmother Maudie died?
It ain't too bad, Tater. You just got to learn that it don't take a lot of water to make good coffee.
Coffee costs money. Water's free.
You've never had to carry it in a bucket 100 yards to the house.
He sipped a while, then handed Jim Ed the half-empty cup.
You know where I keep that bourbon bottle. How about putting a good snort in this for me?
You've already had a good snort.
Jim Ed decided that a man who'd managed to make it to 77 ought to be capable of deciding for himself what was going to kill him. He went to the kitchen and poured 2 jiggers into the cup, then added enough coffee to finish filling it. Wes sipped carefully, and his eyes showed pleasure.
I declare, you'll learn how to make coffee yet.
Now don't you think you ought to eat some supper?
It don't take much grub for an old man.
It takes fuel to keep the engine running.
My engine's all right.
Wes motioned with the cup.
Just needs a jump start now and then.
Jim Ed looked down the road in the direction that Wally Vincent's car had gone.
They'll keep coming back. They'll hire however many lawyers it takes.
But I've already got the best one.
Jim Ed remembered what his father had said about Wes borrowing against his land until he stood a chance to lose it.
You once had this place paid out free and clear, didn't you?
There was a time I didn't have to borrow even for operating expenses. There was a time this little ranch fed us good and raised 2 boys. We never drove a Cadillac or taken no trips to Europe, but we had all we needed.
His gaze drifted toward the road.
Strange, the way life changes things on you. That time I rode Old Midnight, they taken my picture. My name was in the papers. People went out of their way to shake my hand and talk to me. I was a hero for a while, and people liked to brag that they knew me. Now all that's gone. It don't mean a damn thing anymore. I'm just an old man standing in everybody's way.
As Wes pulled a handkerchief from his pocket, a crumpled paper fluttered to the porch floor. Jim Ed stooped to pick it up.
Something you need to keep?
Auction receipt for them 2 calves I hauled to town. Been intending to put it in my files.
Ooh. He pushed to his feet, and wobbling a little, he went into the house. He walked to a bookshelf and dropped the receipt into a cardboard shoebox. Jim Ed's mouth fell open.
That is your file?
I ain't no bookkeeper. There's a lady in town who figures my income tax. She sorts it all out once a year.
Jim Ed stared at the box.
I don't believe this.
What's wrong with it?
Everything. If Dad knew...
I don't see it's any of his concern. He never cared about this ranch.
But accounting has been his life. If he saw how you keep your records, he'd have a fit.
You're a college boy. I suppose you think you could do better.
Anybody could do better than throw the receipts into a shoebox.
Have at it, then. I don't care. See if you learned a damn thing besides how to quit school.
Jim Ed would not have considered the task had Wes not flung it at him as a challenge. It appeared a hopeless undertaking, but he carried the shoebox to the kitchen table and began taking receipts and miscellaneous papers out of it. Some were crumpled, some were torn in two and incomplete. Others had been scribbled on with little regard for their original purpose. He contemplated admitting defeat, but Wes and Truman weren't the only stubborn men in the Hendricks family. He began sorting, first setting the monthly bank statements to one side, then trying to separate auction sales records from receipts for goods bought. Laboriously, he separated them into stacks of like kind until they half covered the table. Some pieces out of the assortment of papers defied classification. He took them to Wes.
You'll have to tell me what these were for.
Sipping at a cup which held bourbon instead of coffee, Wes stared in disbelief at the chaos of papers in all colors, sizes, and stages of disintegration. He examined several that Jim Ed handed him. He handed one back.
Damned if I know. This one might be for some scours medicine I had to buy for the calves. I can't remember.
If you don't remember, how can you know which ones you can deduct for business and which ones you can't?
I leave that up to the lady who fixes my income tax. Way it's been the last few years, there's more expense than income anyway.
He pointed toward another shoebox in the bookshelf.
You ain't through yet.
Oh.
As he worked down through the second box, he found beneath the receipts a miscellany of photographs. Some were fairly recent color prints, which his mother had sent to Wes and Grandmother Maudie of Jim Ed and his parents of their home in Dallas. Others were older black and whites of Jim Ed as a boy. Grandmother Maudie had taken them with a box camera on her visits to Dallas. He came across a couple of himself as a small boy sitting on a horse while Wes held him in the saddle. The recollection was painful. He recognized other pictures as being of his father and a lad who had to be his uncle. James Edward was the proper cowboy in every one. Truman Hendricks always looked as if he were wearing somebody else's clothes. Toward the bottom of the box, he found pictures so old they were brittle, browning a bit. He recognized Grandmother Maudie as a young woman and Wes as a young man riding broncs or roping calves. Jim Ed finally came upon a picture of Wes as a young cowboy of 20 or so, standing with his arm around a beautiful girl. Jim Ed assumed her to be Grandmother Maudie until he compared the photo to others. This girl was more slender than his grandmother had been even in her earliest pictures. She had eyes that would have melted stone, Jim Ed thought, and a smile that lighted her face like sunrise. He was drawn by a magnetism that 50-odd years had not dimmed. He carried the photograph to Wes, who sat with the coffee cup dangled carelessly from one finger.
Who's this?
Wes took the picture in a shaky hand and seemed to have difficulty focusing his gaze. A gradual smile lightened the deep creases in his face.
A girl I knew once, before I met your grandmother.
Who was she?
Well, that was a long time ago. Why do you care?
Just curious. She must have been a knockout in her time.
Most beautiful girl I ever seen.
Did you have a thing going with her?
A thing? That's the way with you kids nowadays. You all think in just one direction. You don't hold anything sacred.
Didn't you ever... even once?
There was honor in them days. A boy didn't crawl into bed with a girl every time his britches got to feeling tight. We respected one another.
I didn't mean to upset you. She was so good-looking, I couldn't help but wonder. You know how it is.
Yeah, I'm afraid I do.
How come you didn't marry her?
Wes stared across the room at nothing in particular.
Yeah, I wasn't nothing but a wild cowboy with rodeoing on my mind. Her folks said she should save herself for somebody who'd amount to something.
Jim Head felt a surge of indignation.
They had a hell of a nerve.
They was right. They was protecting their daughter. She was ready to run off with me and get married in spite of her folks. I was the one who stopped it before it was too late. I knew I could never give her what she'd been used to.
What became of her?
She married a good, hard-working man that had prospects. I found your grandmother, who'd never had much and didn't ask for anything except for me to love her.
Jim Ed took the picture from his grandfather's shaking hand.
Did my grandmother know?
I never lied to her. I kept no secrets.
Any regrets that you didn't marry the other girl?
Some things a man never forgets, but regrets? No. When I tally it all up, I reckon not.
Wes gave Jim Ed a thoughtful study.
If I'd married that girl, you wouldn't be here.
Maybe you'd have a grandson who didn't disappoint you.
Wes had lost himself in his memories. Jim Ed's gaze touched on the old photograph of Wes Hendricks riding Midnight. He thought he knew what Wes had carried with him into the saddle that day. What he had set out to prove, and to whom. Few men aroused a sense of awe in Sheriff Wally Vincent, but Attorney John Talcott did. It was not a sense of physical threat that prevented Vincent from looking Talcott in the eye for more than a moment. Rather, it was a feeling of powerlessness. Too many times, Vincent's considerable physical strength and legal authority had fallen into ashes against the man's sharp courtroom wit and his familiarity with obscure corners of written law. Walking down the courthouse steps, Vincent met Talcott coming up.
Afternoon, Wally.
Not Sheriff or even Mr. Vincent, but the condescending familiarity of Wally. Vincent nodded without speaking. He paused to let his gaze follow the old man through the tall, heavy door and into the dark cavern of the long hall.
Probably working on Wes Hendricks' case, trying to cheat us out of that lake.
He tapped his foot impatiently and frowned while a jail trustee he had detailed to mow the courthouse lawn wiped bird droppings from the official black automobile's hood and top. He took a couple of swipes at the dust on the door and stepped aside to reveal the sheriff's badge painted there 2 feet high in silver and black.
How's that, Cap? Clean enough?
It'll do for now. Better get back on that mower. And don't you leave a bunch of clippings on the sidewalk this time, you hear me?
I hear you, Cap.
The man saluted like a soldier. Vincent looked up at the dark green foliage of a giant live oak tree, already ancient when the two-story limestone courthouse had been built in 1903. There was no practical way to keep birds from lighting in the branches, and the town's meddlesome club women wouldn't hear of mutilating the venerable tree by trimming it back from his parking space. His own wife, Faye, was among the ringleaders, aided and abetted by Orville Levitt's wife, Noreen.
Now there's a woman who can make Jesus Christ use God's name in vain.
He sat in the driver's seat and turned on his communications radio so the dispatcher could reach him in case of emergency. The likeliest emergency he could foresee was that the trustee might slip off to the Stammtisch for a couple of beers. Or it was getting about time for Fuller Gibson's monthly complaint that somebody was stealing cattle from him again. Gibson saw cow thieves behind every cedar bush. Wally eased the automobile into motion and made a slow circle of the courthouse square. His intended destination was Lacey's Cafe, which stood by itself a couple of blocks out on the highway toward the auction ring.
Damn.
He noted with displeasure the two cars parked in front. He went on by, for his visit should be paid when no eavesdropping customers were in the place. While he waited for the customers to leave, he decided on a drive through Little Mexico. It never hurt to look things over. Those people down there always nodded pleasantly, and some even smiled at him. But a man never could see past their eyes and tell for sure what they were thinking. It used to be that a sheriff could just invade Mexican town once in a while, knock a few heads together, and keep things quiet. But that had been in the golden days before the Miranda decision. Times had changed. The Mexicans voted nowadays, and there were so damned many of them. Looked to him like they were gonna take Texas back, and they weren't gonna need Santa Ana's army. They were gonna win in bed, outbreeding the gringos. He saw a middle-aged Hispanic man and his teenage son lifting a black greasy engine out of an old dump truck, using a winch line and a gin pole on another truck about the same age. Vincent stopped to watch, thinking the Mexican community would lose one of its political leaders if that line should break. Rolando Zuniga influenced a lot of votes in this part of town. He waited until the two swung the engine over onto a workbench beneath the shade of a live oak. Wally got out of the car and walked toward them. The teenager regarded the sheriff with misgiving that bordered on hostility, but the elder Zuniga flashed a smile with teeth unbelievably white. So far as Vincent knew, they were all his.
Howdy, amigo. Y'all need any help?
Zuniga reached for a soiled cloth to wipe his hands.
Hey, Sheriff, you want to buy a truck cheap?
He extended a hand to which a considerable amount of grease still clung. Vincent gritted his teeth and accepted the handshake, feeling the gum on his fingers.
Nah, you'll be needing that truck one of these days. When I get the lake project going, I start my fishing lodge, I'll be wanting some dirt work done.
He would probably use a general contractor for most of it. But it never hurt to spread a little work around among the voters, especially if their name was Zuniga.
Oh, we'll be ready. When we finish the overhaul on this truck, it will run like a new one. Pity, Sheriff, we cannot overhaul our old wives as well, eh?
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
Vincent thought that the wish was well stated. He didn't know Senora Zuniga, but Faye could certainly use some rejuvenation.
If you need any help on the heavy lifting, I can send a trustee over.
Oh, no need, Sheriff. I have my sons.
Well, then, take care, amigo.
Vincent nodded with a studied pleasantness and turned back toward his car. It was all he could do to keep from taking out his handkerchief and rubbing at the grease, but that must wait until he was out of sight.
One of these days, once I get that resort running smoothly, they can have the damn sheriff's job. I won't need a county paycheck. I won't need to pretend I like Mexicans and Negras and their babies anymore. They can all go kiss my ass.
The town was too small and its business too sluggish to attract any of the national fast food chains or franchises, except for a Dairy Queen. Almost any Texas town large enough to have a post office had a Dairy Queen. Old Grandma Lacey worked hard to compete. Relieved to see no one parked outside, Wally walked in and found his way to a stool.
Come in, Sheriff.
A pretty waitress stood behind the short counter, wrapping knives, forks, and spoons in paper napkins for the evening supper trade. When Stella Tenney smiled, it was as if somebody had turned on another light.
Coffee?
I'd like that.
Wally looked around the small, table-crowded room, smelling cold grease from the noon cooking. The customers had all gone.
Anybody in the kitchen?
No, honey. My grandma's gone home to rest a little before the supper run starts.
Good. I got something private to talk to you about.
She slumped a little, and her smile quickly faded.
If it's another lie that my ex-husband has told you...
I haven't heard from Hobart. This is about somebody who stands a good chance of becoming an ex-husband.
He went silent until she brought him the coffee. He spooned sugar into it, but no cream, then stared at the young woman while he stirred. She was still a little short of 30. He thought she'd look hardly 20 if she wore less makeup. She used a bright red lipstick that reminded him of the style popular when he was a boy in the 1940s. Her blouse was a size too small, probably on purpose, and unbuttoned almost halfway down. How her ex-husband had walked away and left all that, Vincent could never understand. He sipped the coffee without taking his eyes from her. Her nervousness built until her hands trembled. This silent waiting was a technique he had used on many a prisoner to break him down.
Well, Sheriff, tell me.
Addie Wilkins was in to see me this morning. She had a good deal to say about you and her husband.
Stella Tenney's face reddened.
Me and Leroy are just good friends is all.
That's what Addie says. Real good friends. She says Leroy is seldom home anymore, even to sleep.
Maybe if she took better care of him, he'd stay home. But I don't see it's any of the law's business who I'm friends with.
That's the same thing I told Addie. But she said it would be the law's business if she came over here one day and put a bullet between those mascaraed eyes of yours. Her words, not mine.
The young woman's blue-green eyes grew larger.
You think she'd really do a thing like that?
You wouldn't think so, just to look at her. But I remember when that Hitchner kid shot three men who'd been messing with his sister, and him a choir boy, too. So you never can tell.
Stella stared at the floor, her hands still shaking a little. Vincent could usually take a detached attitude in cases like this, but he found himself caught up in a strong urge to reach across the counter. He squeezed the coffee cup to keep his hands occupied and away from what they wanted to do.
I like Leroy. He's been good to me when I needed somebody to be good to me.
From the gossip Vincent had heard, Stella liked just about everybody, so long as they were male, and Leroy was by no means the only man in town who had been good to her. Many of the town's club women had marked Stella as a menace to domestic tranquility. A couple of them had demanded to know when the sheriff was going to start enforcing the laws against prostitution in this county. But so far as he knew, Stella had asked nothing in return for any favor she chose to grant. And if a man decided to give her a bracelet or some such out of his own free will and Christian generosity, that was not a matter for the law. It was no secret that the cafe's popularity had little to do with old Grandma Lacey's kitchen. Stella's ripe looks and the unspoken suggestion of secret sin would have kept a crowd in this place if Grandma cooked nothing but ham hocks and grits. Vincent could sympathize with Leroy Wilkins, for his own wife was given to spells of winter chill, even in the summertime.
You're a handsome woman, Stella. There's a plenty of eligible men in this town. You don't need Leroy.
She came around the counter and sat down on a stool beside him. He thought he could feel her warmth, but he decided it was his own rising.
I know a lot of folks don't think much of me, Sheriff, honey, but they don't understand. I like having men around me. I don't mean to steal some other woman's husband, but he wouldn't come to me if there wasn't something wrong at home now, would he? That ain't my fault.
I'm not a preacher. I'm just a public servant trying to keep the peace.
The temptation of such a woman could make something go wrong at home, he thought. He stared at the third button on her snug blouse and wished either to close it or open the rest of them. He took a stronger grip on the coffee cup.
How about a refill?
Jim Ed Hendricks had never heard of stomach worms.
It's a sheep you got to worry most about, especially the lambs. You see, in a good wet year like we've got now, that little bitty worm climbs way out on the end of a blade of grass and waits for a sheep to come along and swallow it. The worm makes itself to home in the gut, like a summer boarder with all the hash he can eat. And when it's full, it lays its eggs. Them eggs drop out on the ground in the sheep pills and start the whole shebang all over again. That's why we got to gather and drench the sheep, to kill the stomach worms before they draw the whole bunch down like a gutted snowbird.
Have we got to gather those sheep on horseback?
Jim Ed was thinking about the bay horse named Rowdy, and he dreaded the thought of riding again.
They ain't exactly a house pet, so we can whistle up. Course we got to go out on horseback, but we'll have help. Old Pepper will do most of the work.
He won't ride that horse for me.
You can't let a dog have all the enjoyment.
Jim Ed continued to the corrals while Wes opened the chicken pen gate to let the hens out for the day's foraging. He leaned on the fence from the outside and stared balefully at Rowdy, which stood head to rump with Wes's dun, Yellowhammer. Wes walked into the saddle room and carried out a pair of bridles. Rowdy gave the appearance of having been ridden regularly to Sunday school. Jim Ed could not be sure whether or not the horse was looking at him. In the eye that faced him, Jim Ed saw no evil.
You trying to hypnotize him?
I would if I knew the words. Can't speak horse.
You will if you stay here long enough.
He approached Rowdy first.
That's it, Rowdy. What do you say we step on out of here? What do you say?
The bay horse gave him a wary study and took half a step backward as Wes casually raised his hand toward the animal's nose.
Whoa, son, behave yourself now.
He touched the nose and let his hand move slowly up on the other side of the horse's head, then slipped the bridle reins around Rowdy's neck.
You bridle him, Tater. Time you and him understood one another.
I think we already do.
Rowdy held still as Jim Ed slipped the bit between his teeth, then pulled the bridle up over his ears. He almost gave the impression of enjoying it.
I can read your mind. You're looking forward to throwing me off again.
Jim Ed saddled the bay while Wes caught, bridled, and saddled the dun. Wes didn't have to tell Jim Ed to lead the bay around the corral a few minutes and soften him up. He remembered that lesson from Saturday morning at the C Bar.
Anything special I ought to do?
Get on him where the ground is soft.
Jim Ed tried to remember the instruction Wes had given him about how to mount a horse that was not entirely to be trusted. With his left hand, he gripped the reins and the mane a little forward of the saddle, and his right hand went to the horn. He raised his left foot to the stirrup and gave himself a springing boost with his right foot as he swung up, leaning forward to help offset any sudden movement.
That's pretty good, Tater.
Rowdy disagreed. Before Jim Ed got his right foot safely settled in the stirrup, the horse lunged forward, then jumped straight up.
Whoa.
The second move was unnecessary, for Jim Ed was already lost. He felt himself go out of balance, slipping forward over the bay's neck. He grabbed a handful of mane as the horse came down and gave him a solid jolt that lifted him out of the saddle. He kept sliding forward, holding the bay around the neck as weight and momentum carried him over the left side. He slammed his nose hard against the horse's neck and got a mouthful of mane on his way down. Still hanging on, he managed to land more or less on his feet, then went to his knees in the soft dirt. The bay tore away from him, ran a short distance, and stopped, turning its head to look back at him.
That was some improvement over the last time. I believe you're starting to catch on.
Jim Ed was surprised he'd not lost his breath, and that the only thing which hurt was his nose. His Tom Landry hat lay on the ground.
Old horse is getting to like you, I think. He didn't damage you none.
Sure glad he's on my side.
Jim Ed walked toward the bay, half hoping he might jump the fence and run away. But the horse stood and watched him as calmly as a spectator at a chess match. In a way, it was a chess match, Jim Ed thought.
That's the way, Tater. Get right back on him so he'll know he ain't run a bluff on you.
Jim Ed knew no better way of mounting than he had used the first time, so he did the same thing again. The bay trotted gently around the pen, responding easily as Jim Ed tugged the reins in one direction and the other. Wes and Jim Ed circled the corral together.
A lot of boys wouldn't have got back on him. I'm not sure your daddy would have at your age.
I didn't know I had any choice.
Man's got a choice about everything in this life, except leaving it.
Riding out into the pasture, the dog trotted along beside Wes. The pasture was fenced smaller than the one Jim Ed rode on the sea bars. Its live oaks and cedar brush limited visibility, and he wondered how Wes ever managed to work it by himself. Before they'd gone far, Wes pointed to the fence lying on their left.
You keep going in the direction we've started, and stay inside of that fence. I'll move a little more toward the middle. Any sheep you come across, throw them in my direction. Me and Pepper will push them a little farther to the center. When we get to the far end, we'll come back down the other side and drive everything toward the house.
Jim Ed remained dubious, remembering how many hands helped gather the Seabar cattle. Wes moved away at an angle, pushing the dun horse to a slow trot. Jim Ed rode as he had been instructed and kept a watch on Rowdy's ears. A horse often telegraphed what he was about to do by the way his ears moved. If he suddenly laid them back, Jim Ed was prepared to grab the saddle horn and anything else that seemed solid. But Rowdy was the picture of patience and understanding. His ears, pointing forward, indicated sheep before Jim Ed could even see them. The first set, a dozen or so ewes with large lambs at their sides, edged away from Jim Ed's approach. Fortunately, they were moving in the proper direction, toward Wes, so Jim Ed simply followed, reinforcing their resolution to get away from him. He saw the black and white border collie coming on the run, making a long swing around the sheep, then moving in behind them. Where they had merely trotted from Jim Ed, they ran from the dog. 200 yards away, Wes was shouting instructions. Pepper seemed to understand, for he first dropped to his belly to let the sheep calm down, then closed in to start them moving again, slower. Presently, Jim Ed saw the dog dart out once more, a little forward and to the left, and come out of a clump of brush with another small cluster of sheep. He pushed them toward Wes, as he had done with the others. Jim Ed began to understand how his grandfather had managed most of the time in the absence of outside help. That dog was worth at least 2 men on horseback, and more if they were of Jim Ed's caliber. He came in a little while to the back fence and followed it to the point where his grandfather and Pepper waited.
How's old Rowdy treating you?
He hasn't made a false move.
He'll be eating out of your hand pretty soon.
And take half my fingers off.
Wes leaned forward to pat the bay horse on the neck.
A man learns to appreciate a good friend and accept his faults because the friendship is worth it. A good, honest horse ought to be forgiven one or two little flaws in his character.
He touched the sides of his dun and rode along the fence. On the other side of the net wire ran a graded county road, serving other ranches as an access to the paved highway. In a bit, Wes stopped abruptly.
Damn.
The remains of a deer hung by the legs from the top of the fence.
How did that happen?
Watch a deer jump sometime. Often as not, he gathers his hind legs up under his belly. If he don't lift himself high enough, those legs go between the two top wires and hang him up. This one was probably running from a car.
The dead deer seemed to put Wes into a dark mood for a while. Shortly, he came upon a couple of sheets of discarded newspaper that had blown across the fence and lodged against the base of a cedar tree. Wes scowled. He dismounted, grabbing up the newspaper. He wadded the 2 sheets, then began looking around for a place to put them. He saw none. Jim Ed swung to the ground and lifted a large flat rock by one end. Wes gave him a surprised glance, then shoved the paper underneath, where worms wiggled in agitated response to the sunlight's invasion of their dark, damp home. Jim had eased the rock back into place. Wes seemed almost embarrassed.
I don't understand why some people have to trash up the land.
I don't either.
After they'd ridden a short distance, gathering more stock, Wes stopped.
You go along till you reach the corner, then start back toward the house. Me and Pepper will be throwing sheep to you. Just let them trail along the fence as slow as they want to go, short of stopping altogether.
Pepper cocked his head in the direction of the sound and seemed about to go into a frenzy. Jim Ed had never seen anyone so happy in his work, unless it might be Wes. He found there was nothing complicated or strenuous about gathering the sheep. Wes and Pepper kept pushing little bunches toward him, and he would ease them along to the others plodding down the fence. Sheep being gregarious animals, they seemed eager to join their kind in a bleating, dust-raising mass. Once he had listened a while, Jim Ed found the din not unpleasant. He wondered how a mother and her young child could distinguish each other's bleating amid such a mixture, but now and again he would see a ewe drop back and quickly make an anxious reunion with her lamb, doing a great deal of bleating. Almost immediately, the lamb would begin punching at her udder. The larger lambs had to drop to their knees. The sheep stopped just short of the corral gate. The bunch knotted up while those in the lead resisted entry. The dog moved in at Wes's command, and two ewes trotted briskly through the opening.
That'll do.
The others followed as the dog pulled back and gave them room. Dust boiled up in their wake. Jim Ed dismounted to close the corral gate behind them before they had time to change their minds and make a dash back for the pasture. Wes rode to an interior gate, which he opened to a smaller pen shaped like a funnel, pinching down at one end to a long, narrow alleyway, hardly wide enough for more than two animals to move abreast. He motioned for Jim Ed to push the sheep into it. Pepper helped by running and barking, finally jumping up onto the woolly backs of the tightly packed animals, forcing them to fill the alley, its fences no taller than the sheep. Jim Ed didn't like the dust, but his grandfather seemed to thrive on it. Wes stood staring at the sheep, his gaze running slowly over those pinched into the narrow alley and the others jammed into the crowding pen.
They're doing good this spring. Close to 100% lamb crop, and it looks like these ewes are going to raise them all.
Jim Ed still wondered. His grandfather had always called himself a cowboy, and somehow that image didn't reconcile with this old man standing here proudly surveying these bleating sheep. It certainly didn't square with that browning old photograph of the young rodeo star making a ride on an outlaw bronc named Midnight.
I can't say that they're very pretty.
They would be if they was yours and lambs was selling for 70 cents a pound.
Wes began leading his dun horse toward the barn. Jim Ed and Rowdy caught up with them.
I hated sheep at first, but they growed on me. I decided they can't be all bad if they make you more money than cattle. Besides, an old cow sometimes try to kill you, so will a horse. An old ewe may be dumber than dirt, but you don't find any malice in her. Anyway, sheep can be good for the land if you don't graze them too heavy. They eat a lot of weeds and brush and give the grass a better chance to grow. In a wet spring, you'll sometimes see broom weeds take over the moisture and crowd out most of the grass on ranches that don't run sheep. But sheep eat broom weeds when they're young and tender and they hold them down. A good sheep ranch run right is apt to be in better shape than most straight cow outfits. The Lord put everything on this earth for a purpose.
Even Dallas?
It's not meant for man to understand the Lord's thinking.
Jim Ed had not even a vague idea what his grandfather meant when he spoke of drenching sheep. He fancied that they might be run into a dipping vat or sprayed somehow. He watched the old man pour white powder from a packet into a large plastic jug, fill the jug with water, and stir it until the powder went into suspension.
Morty used to help me do this. Since she's been gone, I've had to do it for myself. You climb over there and catch the sheep for me one at a time. Hold their heads up. I'll handle the drenching gun.
Jim Ed quickly saw what the narrow alley was for. The sheep were too tightly packed to present much resistance. He found it easiest to straddle them and hold them still with the pressure of his legs while he used both hands to force their mouths open. The drench gun had for its barrel a long, thin tube, which Wes pushed down each animal's throat, squeezing out a dose of the worm-killing solution. As he withdrew the tube, Wes used a square piece of colored chalk to make a mark down the animal's nose to prevent giving any of them a repeat dose. Wes worked slowly and methodically, using a patience Jim Ed would have doubted that he had. In rough hands, the steel tube of the drenching gun could do injury to an animal, but Wes's hands were gentle to the task. By the time the last sheep had been drenched and chalk-marked, Jim Ed's shirt was streaked with sweat and clinging to his back. He looked up at the windmill, its fan turning very slowly, and wished he could feel even a little of that cooling breeze. Wes wiped a sleeve across his forehead.
Fixing to turn hot. I'm glad we finished early before it got bad.
Jim Ed pulled at the shirt. It drew right back against his skin like a mustard plaster. He squinted up at the noonday sun, not yet at its midsummer peak of heat, but carrying an uncomfortable authority already.
We're through working sheep for the day?
Jim Ed had thought for a minute that the old man might be softening up.
Yeah, sheep always suffer when you handle them too much in the heat. Old Pepper don't work as good either.
That suits me. I could use a little shade.
It's not you I was thinking about, it's the stock. Me and you, we'll go to work on that fence after dinner.
The first couple of holes were a bit easier to dig, and Jim Ed thought perhaps Wes had been right about the struggle being less difficult as they worked their way down the slope toward their goal at the river. The third hole seemed to be of solid rock from the first inch all the way to the bottom. Once the sweat broke free, however, he found the work not so taxing as before. The soft breeze against his soaking shirt cooled his skin. He paused to rest at intervals, watching Pepper worrying his way down through the timber along the river, trying to flush out something that would run from him.
I haven't seen old Snort.
We'll probably see him if we stay till the cool of the evening. Deer shade up through the heat of the day.
That shows their intelligence.
Deer don't have note payments to make or taxes to pay. Are you allergic to sweat?
Not when there's good reason for it.
There's reason. This is old Snort's stomping ground, him and a lot of other wildlife, too. If Big River was to build that lake they're wanting, he'd be out of a home.
He'd just move up away from the waterline.
And overcrowd other land that's already got about all the deer it can support. Reduce the habitat, and you reduce the wildlife. It's as simple as that.
Wes's determined eyes told Jim Ed that the subject had been carried as far as it needed to go for now. He got on his knees and scooped out chipped rock with a small bent coffee can. Wes turned and surveyed the fence posts already solidly in place.
Yeah, you ain't doing too bad.
Jim Ed found that after he had reached a certain level of discomfort from the heat, it became no worse. He took pleasure each time Wes measured the depth of a new hole and declared it sufficient. He found satisfaction in completing a piece of work and knowing he had given it an honest effort. Each time he and Wes set a post permanently in a hole, he took fresh stock in the results of his labor. A lengthening fence line, a river less distant than when he had started. He heard somebody, maybe Wes, perhaps his father, say that work was sometimes its own reward. He was not yet totally convinced, but he would no longer reject the premise out of hand. They labored until the sun neared the tops of the tall pecan trees on the river. The last post set, the tools loaded into the pickup, and Pepper whistled up from his latest raid in the timber, Wes leaned against the vehicle's grill and stared down the slope.
I can see something stirring at the edge of that live oak mott. Watch, and I think you'll see old Snort pretty soon.
Jim Ed sat on the ground, his arms folded across his knees. Sure enough, in a few minutes he could see the big buck advance cautiously from the cover of the foliage, pausing frequently to look around. Shortly, the buck worked its way down to the river, two does trailing closely behind him.
Tell me something in the city that does a heart half as much good, and I'll eat that citified hat of yours.
The hat is safe.
Supper was mostly the noon meal warmed over, except with new coffee. Jim Ed was slowly beginning to tolerate Wes's bull stout brew. Even so, the first time he got the chance to do it without Wes watching him, he was going to scrub that evil pot. Now Wes sat in a hide-bottomed rocking chair and plucked the strings of his guitar, tuning by ear. Jim Ed stood leaning on a door jamb, listening to his grandfather on the porch. It was something a world apart from the music that stirred his pulse and his feet, yet he would admit it had a pleasant melody. He thought of the guitar hanging on the wall of his room, the one James Edward was said to have played before Jim Ed was born. Without consciously willing it, he found himself beside his grandfather, guitar in hand. Wes's eyes widened in surprise, and his mouth curved into a smile. Jim Ed brought up the accompaniment by ear as best he knew how. It was much different from his band in Dallas. After a time, Wes flexed his fingers.
Stiffened up on me. I can't play like me and Morty used to.
You do fine. I'm afraid I don't know much about your music.
You do fine.
The old man's eyes glistened.
First time I've had anybody play along with me since your grandmother began to fail.
Jim Ed suspected the music carried the old man back to a remembered time that was young and bright. A time when his fingers didn't lag stiffly on the strings, when the guitars were finely tuned one to the other. Jim Ed could only imagine how it must have been, and he wished he could know. Glory B. Dawson kept a firm grip on the hackamore rein in case the pony might decide to drop its head and pitch. It was only greenbroke and still likely to yield to outbursts of independence. She reined the young horse in a wide circle around the corral, the hoofs stirring a fine white dust.
He's got a nice smooth gait.
Foreman Bill Roper, his husky form hunched on the plank fence, sat beside his son Johnny.
I thought you'd like him. Fuller Gibson paid Juan Sanchez for the breaking, but the pony humped the first time Fuller got on him. He'd be tickled to make a trade.
Glory B's grandmother walked slowly toward the corral, her face shaded by a flat-brimmed old cowboy hat that seemed a mismatch with the house dress she wore. Lavinia Dawson took each step carefully, as if it brought pain. Glory B kept the sorrel in a long trot through a couple more circles around the corral, then brought him to a stop where her grandmother leaned against the outside of the fence. Lavinia had a reputation as a good judge of horses.
Reckon we ought to trade for him, Graham?
Law, girl, I won't be riding him. You're the one who's got to be satisfied.
I can't ride old Ronnie all the time.
She looked back at Roper.
You think he'll work? There's no place on this ranch these days for anything that won't pull its weight.
Juan says he already watches a cow.
Glory reached down to pat the pony on its neck. Startled by the unaccustomed touch, it jumped. Her rump bumped against the cantle of the saddle. She was in no danger of losing her seat, however. She had learned to ride a horse almost as early as she'd learned to walk.
What have we got that we could afford to swap? Money's too tight to be buying him.
We have an old oat thief or two that I'd like us to get shed of. They're the kind Fuller likes best, slow and gentle.
Glory B reached down again, easier this time, to pet the sorrel bronc. Its skin rippled at the touch, but the horse didn't jump.
Does he have a name?
Fuller didn't say so. Call him what you want to.
Glory B warmed to a thought.
He's skittish, but he can be gentled. I think I'll call him Pilgrim.
Roper started to smile.
After anybody I know?
How about opening the gate for me, Johnny, so I can let him run a little?
Sure.
Watch out now. You never know what a green broke animal will do.
He's just another pilgrim who hasn't learned yet what's good for him. But I'll bet I can teach him.
You sure you're talking about the horse?
What else?
She pulled the bronc's head around as the gate opened, and she touched her heels gently to his sides. She wore no spurs. They could cause unnecessary trouble with a young horse like this. As she rode out the gate and into the green pasture, she glanced up toward the big two-story bay-windowed frame house her great-grandfather had built when her grandmother had been but a girl. A woman stood on the broad porch, arms folded, her stiff stance expressing disapproval evident even at 50 yards.
Well, Mother, I don't approve of everything you do either.
Glory B. anticipated the lecture. It had been delivered so many times that it had fallen into a set pattern, like an aging teacher's lessons or a politician's patented speech. Glory B.'s father had wanted a son. Her mother had wanted a daughter. Both had been disappointed. Her grandmother accepted Glory B. as she was, guiding her subtly with a loose rein, as Glory B. intended to do with this pliable bronc. Satisfied of Pilgrim's fitness, Glory B. watched with her grandmother as Johnny Roper continued the reining exercises.
You're smiling awfully pretty this morning, Graham. Feeling better?
Lavinia Dawson's eyes hinted at mild rebuke.
What do you mean, better? There's nothing wrong with me.
It was useless to remind her grandmother that she had eaten almost nothing the day before and had been unable to retain even that little. The lingering after effect showed as faint blue pockets beneath Lavinia Dawson's brown eyes.
Graham, it wouldn't hurt for you to go to San Angelo or San Antonio for a good physical checkup, you know.
All the doctor ever does for me is to drain my purse.
That reply was one Glory B. would have expected from Wes Hendricks.
Probably just her age. I hope 50 years from now that I can be half the woman she is. That's going to make a good horse, Graham.
I'm glad you like him. But there's a lot more to running a ranch than riding a horse.
That's the part I like best.
It used to be one of the requirements of ranch life. Now, it's getting to be one of the luxuries. The time you spend studying the market and keeping books is what really counts. Ranches make it or lose it in the office.
That's why I went to school, Graham, to learn that part. But I have to tell you, I don't enjoy it. I'd much rather be out here in the open.
I know. Your grandfather hated to see the sun go down. That meant he had to go to the house. Your father, God rest him, was a lot the same way. That's one reason this ranch is in a financial squeeze. He hated bookwork. He hated going to the bank. He hated keeping performance records on his cows. He would never learn to hedge the calves. He just accepted what the market would give him the day he got ready to sell.
I don't enjoy those things either.
Three generations of men on this ranch thought they weren't working unless they were on horseback or doing something with a pick and shovel. The harder they sweated and the tireder they got, the more they felt justified. They didn't know how to just sit and figure and think. That didn't satisfy their Puritan conscience. They thought sitting at a desk was idle, and being idle was an abomination in the sight of the Lord.
They could have always hired bookkeepers.
They could have hired cowboys cheaper and done the bookkeeping themselves. They'd have known more about their business. They could have paid dependable men like Bill Roper to take care of the routine work so they could be free to do the planning and the bookkeeping. That's where salvation lies for us, if it's anywhere.
Glory B. looked at her grandmother as if she had just stepped on her favorite toy and broken it.
Something deep down tells me you're right, but it's a far cry from the good old days.
I've lived 75 years and I've never seen the good old days. They were always some other time. Would you walk with me back to the house? I'm afraid I need to sit down a while.
Glory B. tried not to show concern, but it was not like her grandmother to tire from so small a thing as walking to the barn. Lavinia stepped away from the fence, and Glory B. took her arm.
Mother's been standing on the porch and glaring at me. I'd just as well go listen to a lecture and get it over with.
I won't always be here, girl. The day will come when you two have nobody except each other.
Ever since I can remember, she's been trying to make me over into what she thinks I ought to be. She doesn't ask what I want to be.
And you? Do you accept her as she is?
I don't like her running after that jackleg lawyer from San Antonio, if that's what you mean. He's not half the man my father was.
He's a different man than your father was. That doesn't mean he's a lesser man. I gather that in his field he's a person of some importance.
Not to me, he isn't.
Glory B. had been supporting some of her grandmother's weight, but now the old lady pulled away.
Girl, I learned a long time ago not to try to change people once they're set in their ways. Even if you can, everybody ends up miserable. Take them as they are, or leave them be.
They had stopped at the flower bed beside the steps that led up to the broad porch. She looked at a fading remnant of bluebonnets. A month ago, the bed had been full of them.
Oh, you seldom see them stay in bloom this late. Every day, there are fewer of them. I wonder how much longer these will hang on.
It's been a wet year. I guess they just enjoy being alive.
But one day, we'll look and the last of them will be gone. Like the people we love. Turn away a little while, and when you look back, some of them are gone. Think on that before you fuss about your mother.
Only as they ascended to the porch did Lavinia allow her granddaughter to help her again. When they cleared the steps, she pulled free.
Life is difficult enough without trying to live someone else's in addition to your own.
Part of the porch floor had been rebuilt twice over the years, but the gingerbread trim remained the same as in old photographs Glory B had seen of her grandmother as a small girl, dressed in her Sunday best and seated on the steps. Oval glass and a hand-carved front door had turned slightly blue during the long years, but it had otherwise survived into the fourth generation of Chatfields and Dawsons, unchanged and unbroken. The sense of continuity had long been among the ranch's strongest assets. Now a different era threatened to devalue that continuity, and perhaps even end it. Entering the large parlor was in some respects like stepping back 70 or 80 years to the time of Major Chatfield. Glory B's mother wanted to modernize it, but she had consistently been outvoted on any major changes by Glory B's father and grandmother. There had been compromises. The house was much better lighted than in the Major's time. In the parlor stood a console television, and out back was a black steel mesh satellite dish, discreetly placed behind an old wash house, so it was out of sight. But the original parlor chandelier still hung. The wallpaper was of a flowered pattern, probably little different from the one Lavinia Dawson's mother chose before the carpenters finished. Wooden beading lined many inside walls and suggested an age long gone. The house, Glory B's city-born mother said, was an anachronism, a tombstone recalling a frontier time more properly lived down than lived up to. But to Glory B, that past had its traditions, were an anchor to which she had clung during many a threatening storm. Her grandmother, the trustee of that tradition, had always held the lantern and guided her through the darkness to warm, dry shelter. She had long felt more in common with her grandmother than with her mother. Madeline Dawson stood at the doorway that led into the cavernous downstairs hall, cigarette in hand.
Gloria Beth, I want to speak to you.
I'm here, Mother.
You had a telephone call a while ago from that truck driver.
By that truck driver, I suppose you mean Shorty Bigham.
I did not promise him you would return his call.
But I will. I suppose he was at his father's garage.
I did not ask. I hoped you would not call him back.
He's my friend, one of my best friends. Of course I'll call him back.
Glory B's mother left the doorway, but stopped two full paces from her daughter. They had become used to keeping at least that much distance. Looking at her mother, Glory B saw some reflection of herself, but it was like a reflection in a mirror, flat and cold and unreachable. Madeline Dawson had been a beautiful woman once, and Glory B supposed she still was in the eyes of men. But Glory B could see only the barrier raised by an old and basic conflict that had started the first time Madeline Dawson had handed her daughter a pair of black patent dress shoes, and Glory B had reached for boots instead.
He'll be a truck driver all his life.
Some of the best people I know are truck drivers.
Surely in 4 years at college you could have found friends who aspired to a much better future. One purpose of education is to acquire more sophistication in your tastes.
Madeline Dawson had come from an old Galveston shipping family which traditionally trained its women to be ornamental so they might marry well. A pleasant smile, an ease with polite conversation, and an ability to wear fashionable clothes were of more consequence than skill in the kitchen. She had been brought up to be a lady of good quality, which meant she could not install a light bulb for herself. Unfortunately, her family had fallen on hard times as Galveston declined, salvaging little more than a name, warm memories, and a dream of someday recovering lost glory. On dark days when Glory B allowed herself to wallow in suspicions, she wondered if her mother had perceived that return to glory in her marriage to Carr Dawson, scion of an old West Texas ranching family. If so, she must have been sadly disappointed, for life in this rugged hill country was as alien to the culture of Galveston as if they had been two different nations.
When I first went off to school, I met some of those sophisticated college men you're always touting to me. As a whole, I find truck drivers more honest.
Every group has its predators.
But they're easier to spot among cowboys and truck drivers. They haven't learned to cover it up with prep school bullshit.
Her mother flinched at the language. Her grandmother shook her head and retreated toward her bedroom. Glory B wondered sometimes if the old house was big enough to hold Dawson women of three different generations and three often contrasting ways of thinking. A thought struck Glory B, and she smiled perversely.
I've met a university man here, Mother. He might suit you better than Shorty Bigham.
Almost anyone would.
Glory B could visualize her mother going into shock at the sight of Jim Ed Hendrix with his garish rock music t-shirt.
Maybe I'll invite him over one of these days.
Wes and Jim Ed stood in the stock pen, the last of the day's chores complete.
This is Saturday, ain't it? I've worked the butt off of you all week.
I haven't complained.
Hey, tell you the truth, I thought you'd be hollering to go back to Dallas by now. What with me working you so hard and old Rowdy pitching you every time you get on him.
He hasn't managed to throw me off in the last 3 days.
You're learning. But if you was really to want to go, I'd set you up to a bus ticket.
You want to get rid of me?
No. But I don't want to hold you if you'd rather go. You've lasted longer than I expected, and probably longer than your daddy figured too, I'll bet.
It's longer than I expected, but I'm getting used to the place.
There was more that he could not tell his grandfather. It was better to stay here than to go home and face the music for not finishing the duty his father had imposed on him.
Let's get in the house. While I fix us a bite, why don't you go and take yourself a shower? I'd like you to run to town before the stores close this afternoon.
What for?
Big River ain't pleasant for me these days. I've got a prescription that needs refilling. Besides, Marty's old car needs to be driven every once in a while to keep the battery up and the motor running. And I thought you might like to go to a picture show or something.
The Big River picture show closed down a long time ago.
Oh, I forgot. Last time I went was to see John Wayne.
That's the last time a lot of people went.
During the meal, Jim Ed noticed that his grandfather seemed to be looking around him rather than at him. While he gathered the dishes and put them into a sink full of hot soapy water, Wes left the kitchen. That gave Jim Ed a chance he had waited for. He emptied the coffee pot, submersed it, and gave it a thorough scrubbing with a steel brush. Wes returned presently carrying an old leather wallet, hand-tooled like a saddle.
I told you when you come that I couldn't pay you no wages, but you've done a right smart more work than I expected.
I didn't ask for anything.
I'll give an old man a chance to keep his conscience clean.
Wes placed several bills on the drain board.
Here's a list of groceries we'll need. I trade it the red and white.
He reached into the cabinet for a small empty bottle.
This is a prescription. Take it to Orville Levitt's drugstore.
I thought you fell out with him.
He's the only drugstore left in town.
Anything else?
No, stay as long as you want to and have a good time.
Where would I have a good time in Big River?
Wes looked away.
There's a place called the Blue Moon that a lot of the young folks go to. You might run into somebody you know.
I don't know anybody in Big River.
Glory B will be there. Oh.
Oh? And when did she tell you that?
Wes busied himself drying dishes with a cotton cloth.
This morning on the phone, she called to ask me how I was getting along. She just happened to mention the Blue Moon, and I just happened to remember, so.
Just happened to. She's probably got some kind of a trap set for me.
She's a good girl, that Glory B.
And Rowdy's a good horse. He just tries to break my neck.
Wes noticed the coffee pot for the first time, left upside down to drain. Crestfallen, he turned it over and looked inside.
What have you done?
Just scrub that old pot. Didn't look like you ever had.
You'd have thought Jim Ed had just shot his horse.
Scrubbed it? Ruined it, you mean?
God, boy, don't you know you never scrub a coffee pot? It takes months to get the flavor right again. I'd just about as well throw it away.
Wes was still mourning the violation of the coffee pot when Jim Ed left, chagrined. Grandmother Maudie's gravy-colored Ford was 8 years old. It was evident that Wes seldom drove it, for the engine was sluggish, trailing dark smoke the first mile or so. Jim Ed turned around once, fearing it was about to stall out. But the engine settled into an even rhythm and the smoke stopped.
Well, I guess it'll make it.
He drove up and down the main street a couple of times, trying to remember Big River as it had been during his few boyhood visits. He had paid scant attention the day Wes had picked him up from the bus stop at Levitt's. Now that it appeared likely he was going to spend a while with Wes, it wouldn't hurt to know where everything was. Probably a third of the business buildings stood empty and dark. He noted the theater, which Wes had forgotten was closed. The car had less than a quarter of a tank, so he pulled in at a service station. The proprietor sat in a tilted back wooden chair, its scarred old legs reinforced by heavy wire. He leaned forward to bring the chair's front legs down hard upon the concrete driveway as Jim Ed drove up to the full service pump. He scowled and leaned back against the wall when Jim Ed went on to another pump marked self-service. Jim Ed could feel the proprietor's gaze burning him while he raised the hood and checked the oil for himself. The man stood only when Jim Ed dug out his wallet, and then with reluctance. He took the money without gratitude, his attention focused on Jim Ed's hat.
What do people do around here for excitement?
Well, you might find some excitement out at the roping arena.
He pointed his chin toward the highway.
A bunch of the boys are running calves this afternoon.
Why do you think I'd find any excitement in that?
There's a couple of them boys get a kick out of whittling you city fellers down the size.
Jim Ed saw a small, fly-specked placard that had probably been thumbtacked to the wall for 20 years. It said, "If you like our service, tell your friends. If you don't, tell us."
Thanks for the service. Any extra charge for the information?
It's on the house.
Jim Ed was rapidly losing interest in Big River. He parked in front of Levitt's drugstore, put Wes's empty medicine bottle in his pocket, and walked in. The musty smell reminded him of neighborhood stores he knew in older sections of Dallas, their furnishings harking back to the 1930s. A marble-topped soda counter remained from an olden time, though it was stacked high with racks of miscellaneous merchandise, from fingernail polish and lipsticks to support hose and corn plasters. It had been years since anyone had sat on the revolving stools to be served a fountain Coke or a banana split.
May I help you, young man?
Jim Ed had a hard time finding the woman who spoke among the accumulated clutter of 40 or 50 years. She was a short, gray little woman he guessed to be in her 70s.
I've got a prescription here to be refilled.
My husband is the pharmacist, and he's out for a few minutes. But give me the number. I'll type up a new label so you won't have to wait too long.
He handed her the bottle.
Oh, this is for Wes Hendricks.
She studied Jim Ed with new interest.
You'd be his grandson from Dallas. I've heard about you.
Yes, ma'am.
Land sakes, I can't say you look much like Wes.
She moved closer and peered so intently into his face that Jim Ed backed away and bumped into a counter.
Then again, you do look a little like Wes did, first time I ever knew him. That was way back. Something about your eyes, I think, and the shape of the nose. Wes was a right handsome man when he was young. Turned many a girl's head. I'll bet you do that too, don't you?
I'll come back after a while and pick up the medicine.
No, you wait. Let me look at you.
Jim Ed had a feeling that as she stared unabashedly at him, she was seeing somebody else.
Yes, you do remind me of Wes, the way he used to be. I knew Wes even before I knew Orville, my husband. He cut quite a figure in those days, Wes did. Rodeo rider and all that. He could have had his pick among the girls in Big River.
Jim Ed remembered the old photograph he had found of his grandfather and a beautiful young girl who was not Grandmother Maudie. She had married someone else, Wes had said, someone who had prospects. A drugstore in those days would have looked a lot more promising than a proficiency at riding Bronx.
Did you know him well back then?
Well enough.
So much for that little mystery.
And I'm on your granddaddy's side about that new lake. Orville and me, we've argued a lot about that. I reserve the woman's sacred right to disagree with her husband, guaranteed by the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
He'd be tickled to know.
Against the glare from the plate glass window, he recognized Orville Levitt, moving at a slow and deliberate pace. Levitt blinked, seeing Jim Ed.
This is Wes Hendricks' grandson.
Yeah, I know.
Levitt hesitantly extended his hand. Jim Ed responded with an uneasy reserve, remembering the tension between his grandfather and Levitt.
How is Wes?
Fair enough. Just needs a refill on some medicine.
Noreen Levitt held up the new label she had typed on an ancient Underwood. Levitt disappeared for a minute behind stacks of boxes and bottles. When he reappeared, he was placing a fresh bottle into a small white paper bag.
Wes has been much too long using this up. If you have any influence over him, we should see that he takes his medicine when he's supposed to. It's for his own good.
Everybody's telling him what he ought to do for his own good, just the way they do with me.
But Jim Ed sensed from the druggist's eyes that the man's concern was real.
I'll try. He doesn't listen very well.
Yeah, well, tell me something I didn't already know. Jim Ed!
The elderly druggist walked out from behind the register, his brow creased.
You gotta understand, son. Wes and me, we punched cattle together before I went off to pharmacy school. For most of 50 years, I counted him as my best friend. It hurts to come to a partner the ways, but I gotta consider the good of the whole community. That doesn't mean I don't still love and respect your grandfather. I do. I just wish I knew how to tell him that. I wish you could tell him.
I wish I could too.